Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and also, as you know, proud host of VFE. And today we are making history. What I mean by making history is we have the first active principal that is going to be live on VFE. And my approach is trying to differentiate different leaders, right, from the various sectors within the education ecosystem. We've had, you know, researchers, university professors, education leaders that are entrepreneurs. We've had superintendents, chief of staffs, but now we want to differentiate and bring it to the instructional level. So I've asked many, many leaders across the country, specifically in California, who's the principal to go to? Who should be the first principal? And a multiple of our common sisters kept on saying one name. And I'm like, all right, I see her on Twitter all the time, waking up at 3:30 in the morning, getting the workout in. One of the national fit leaders, but more importantly, she is an instructional leader that has changed instruction and culture comprehensively. She is the principal of Castleview Elementary in the Riverside Unified District. And also, I've seen her around, heard her speak. She's just a dynamic individual. So this is the official first active principal to come on VFE. I would like to introduce to you Ms. Rosabel Gonzalez-Rodriguez. Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez, welcome to VFD.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
How's
curious, which sisters? I'm so excited. Thank you for sharing.
Trust me, we got our same sisters, Zandra, Rosa. I'm telling you, those leaders, you know, they identify, you know, some of the best up-and-coming leaders. And Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez, you are the name of California to be the next quote-unquote superintendent and be. So thank you for being on VFE. Glad to have you bring your perspective here.
Well, thank you. Oh, no pressure, right? No pressure for the future. But I've connected with so many women that have encouraged and been so positive in my life. And it has been the true, like I say, upgrade, right? Because it's been so many great women that just through, I feel like even osmosis, just hanging out and just hearing them and just picking their brain and then just learning from them. It's been an amazing adventure for sure.
Absolutely. And glad to have you on here. So there's absolutely no pressure, but you know, there's no pressure to you anyway. I see your workouts in the morning. Absolutely. So Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez, this is going to be a really fun show. All right. So just enjoy it. Some questions go off, right? Go off the radar, but I promise you we'll bring it back in. But the first question you are going to absolutely love. I can't wait to hear your response to this. Specifically, I might get a little psyche into what is the actual music you listen to while you're working out. But you are a recognized principal, obviously, in the state of California, but also recognized as a national fit leader in this country. But when you're within your school community, right, when Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez is a principal, right, she's engaging with her families daily. She's engaging with community members and constituents, her staff, but more importantly, her students that engage with her every day. When they see you, what is your equity song that defines you? And what song comes to mind when your community encounters your leadership under Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez?
One of the songs that I've even told my staff, like my very first staff meeting where I was looking around my staff and I knew that I'd be leading them. And the chorus is always that Kelly Clarkson song, For a Moment Like This. And I told them and they all laughed, you know. But for the most part, I do like the song by Pink, Today is the Day. And yeah, just to remind me every day is a new day, and just to pump me up. And so when I'm there with my families and trying to keep it positive, no matter what kind of morning I've had or afternoon or whatnot, they deserve the very best of me. And so I hit reset even day by day, moment by moment. I hit reset and then smile, wave, and keep my head up so that I could be the very best, you know, leader. During my workouts, though, I am
Yes, please.
True fan of hip hop, but primarily 90s hip hop to early, very, very early 2000. Everything, anything after that, I probably age myself because I have no idea as to who or what. But from Tupac to Biggie to P. Diddy or Puff Daddy or Diddy, whatever it is now that we say. So that's the kind of style of music I like to work out to, just to get my mind right for the morning.
Absolutely. Now, I'm a 90s hip hop guy, too. And, you know, you're from the West Coast. You said Tupac first and then Biggie. You know, I'm from the East Coast. We say Biggie, Tupac. Oh, man, that is great. But when you think about your song, what today is the day, right? You know, you make that transition from working out, you know, and listening to Tupac to Biggie, then now transitioning into today is the day. Wow. Right? Because you're getting yourself motivated for the day, but then to carry out that every day is a new day, right? For your students, for your families, and also how you're serving within your community, as well as your community members. But let's take this back, right? I want to challenge you, because you have challenged the traditional norms in education for a while now. I like to say the BC stage of education, that's an alignment to my book. But moreover, you're more intentional with your stance regarding gender equity in education. This kind of goes back to the outset, right, of your introduction of today's episode. You're beloved by the masses. Trust me, you are. We engage with the same people. You are beloved. But how did you create a learning environment, your learning environment, right, at Castleview, that is rooted in excellence, equity, and being culturally responsive in the AC stage of education? Because when I think about, you know, when I was a superintendent and with my principals, right, for them to have that triangulation between excellence, equity, and having this culturally responsive lens, that's tough to achieve, right? Kind of like in this parallelization of all three. But based off of your leadership and based off of the various perspectives that respect you in the state of California, how did you create that, and how are you going to continue that in the AC stage of education?
Well, that's something I'm still working at, also because this is my second year at my school. And so, but from day one, I shared my story with my staff. I shared my upbringing. I've shared being a part of a single income home, single mother, English language learner. So I started my career here with my staff, sharing a little bit about myself, and then I peeled off layers through conversations, and then bringing it back. This year was a real impactful year because I shared a little bit more about my story with my staff, and we have in my community, we have a percentage of students that get bussed in from because of boundaries and whatnot. But I work in a very beautiful, you know, community, and then I have students that get dropped off here. And so anytime that has to do with either labels or anything about inclusivity, I make sure that I bring it back to my decision making, to staff, as to, well, how are we going to support our students, and moving forward, how is that going to benefit or impact our students? A lot of the times in education, and I've only been out of the classroom for 4 years, so I could still really much connect with educators and people in the classroom, because it hasn't been 10 years since I stepped foot in the classroom. The only thing that I have not done is taught virtually and taught with a mask on. That's the only thing, you know. Other than that, like, I was step by step with every classroom teacher. And it is very challenging at times, because with classroom teachers, you only know your four walls. And the only, you know, the only impact that you think you have is those four walls, but then it's a big old entity that the principal sees. So it's making sure that that what I've learned is making sure that decision making is very open, and then also there's input from every staff member, and then also with parents, making those relationships with the parents and having them a part of it too, but making sure that we give the credit to staff so that they're the ones in the classroom, they're the ones that are, you know, impacted the most. And so it's just bringing it back to the kids, and that's pretty much what it's been. How are we going to, you know, support all of our students?
And Miss, I'm just writing down your thoughts and your stating this, but Miss Gonzalez Rodriguez, you bring up a really important point, right? And if we want to create inclusive culture within our schools or inclusive cultures within our schools, we have to have input from our constituents as well as students. And you have done a great job. I know you've been active with trying to receive feedback, constant feedback, whether it be from staff, students, as well as your families. How did you, now this is kind of like a sub-variant question, right? How did you create that inclusiveness by a voice and agency of your community? What does that look like in practice from the principal all the way down to the classroom and to your community members having that strategic input for decision-making?
For me, it's worked out to be very visible. I'm at drop-off. One parent, we just had a lunch on the lawn on Friday, and he's like, he stopped by. He's like, thank you so much for always being front and center. And I said, oh, thank you for noticing. I really appreciate that. And I really did appreciate it. Like, it was the best compliment that somebody could have given me. I'm front and center. And so whether I'm at supervision for recess, lunch duty, or just walking through classroom was walk through informal observations or just hallways or stepping into the lounge to just chit chat with whoever is there and making the time for, custodial supervisors, classified and certificated. It's been really important that I'm still building the relationships because it's only been 2 years. So trust and building the relationship has really been supportive by my visibility in the classroom, out of the classroom, and most importantly, in the playground with my kids.
Excellent. Excellent. And what I love is that, the lunch on the lawn, I tell you, I wish I had that strategy because that is awesome to have lunch with your parents on the lawn of the school and be able to listen, right? Listen to your parents, listen to the feedback, how to improve the conditions of students as well as families. Good job with that. And the focus on instruction too. So, but I'm going to go off to somewhere that is completely off of school environment, off of instruction, off of alignment with culture. I'm going to talk about self-care. Yeah, I had to bring it in. I'm going to let you know now, I am a fan, Miss Gonzalez Rodriguez. You get me motivated, man. I'm telling you, I'll tell you this, Miss Gonzalez Rodriguez, some of my Kobe quotes come directly from some of your quotes as well. I'm like, yo, she got me motivated. I'm ready. I'm fired up. But awesome. If you're getting me fired up, you're getting the masses, your followers, fired up about fitness, right? But more importantly, self-care and mental health, right, are very important, as evidenced by you being one of the national fit leaders in education. But how do I know that you're serious about this? I'm telling you, this is my audience. She got a gym in her house and she's crushing it. Yeah. She is crushing it. So I'm telling you, you have defined my, I'm getting back in there. The weather's changed. I'm getting back in there. Don't worry about it. But what is your definition of success with individual wellness goals, right? And for my listeners today that finally get to engage with you, what advice do you have regarding exercise, self-care, and healthy living to sustain the changes and the challenges that we're facing in the education ecosystem? Because we need to be healthy in order to be healthy for our students and our families. So what advice would you provide my audience?
I think balance is a very important thing. I know that it's always talked about finding balance, but it's being intentional with that balance. So for me, I do wake up at 3:30 in the morning. I'm tired here and there, but at the same time, my whole entire family, except for my teenagers sometimes, we are in bed by 8. So we are in bed by 8. I have my alarm set to 7:30 story time with my little one. And then setting the alarm, so then it's 8 o'clock, we go to bed. That way it's like clockwork. And one of my cousins once told me, she's like, you're like a creature of habit. And so it's creating, at first I was like, no, I'm not. I could be unstructured if I wanted. I could be spontaneous, but I'm not. I like building habits, and it's important to build those habits.
Yeah.
Because it was really hard when I met my husband 7 years ago. He was the one that was working out early in the morning. And so I was like, you're crazy. How do you wake up that early? And so then I started trying it out. And then I realized I have the rest of the day to do whatever it is that I wanted because I started my day with working out. And then when COVID hit, March 13th, we closed schools here in California, and we were looking for equipment like around March 10th or so, because my husband's like, you know, I think we're going to be closing down or something's happening. He also works for the state of California. And so I'm like, what? And so we started looking to getting just different parts of the gym equipment that we needed. They didn't get delivered till probably almost like April, May. And so, but since then we've been building it. I haven't been into like a gym building in a very long time. And so knowing that I have that, I could, you know, on the weekends, it's a little unstructured, so I can go in and work out whenever. Just making the time for yourself, because when I know when I don't work out, I even feel groggy. I don't feel at my very best because I've made that routine for me. But I mean, some people do yoga, some people go to Zumba, some people dance and find other ways to just outlet to release all that, you know, tension. But it's really just checking in with yourself and then making those habits as to taking breaks. I take my lunch every day at 1 o'clock, Monday through Friday. Unless there's an emergency, I take my lunch and I eat with my noon supervisors here on campus, and we check in with behavior or anything else that's changed. But I do sit down to eat and I take my 15 to 25 minutes. I know some people that don't eat all day long, but then you're tired. I gotta eat. I have to, you know, so I'm hydrating and I take my small little lunch, planned lunch. I prepare my meals on the weekend so that I'm ready for Monday through Friday.
Yeah. And you know, I'm a creature of habit as well. Right. And I'm a former college basketball player. So routine, systematic every single day, but you get into that mindset and that mind frame to follow that specific routine. And I tell you, you know, checking in with yourself and building habits. I mean, those are two strategies I think that can just be applied, not only in just, you know, whether it be working out, self-care, it can be applied to life, right? Just establishing those routines and being able to have that consistency. But 3:30 in the morning, right? Let me just give you context for all my East Coast people. Some people have a hard time waking up at 6:30 in the morning, right? Some people have a hard time waking up at 6:30 in the morning, 3:30 in the morning every day. Listen, 3:30 in the morning, our time, 12:30 p.m., their time. So listen, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, I tell you, you are a motivator, right? A motivator for people that watch you and that engage with you. Thank you for that, because I wanted that to really come out with regards to self-care and taking care of yourself, well, that wellness piece. But what really resonated for me, you got to check in with yourself and you make time to eat every day, you know, and I really want to stress this as we get into, before we get into the next question, please eat during the day, please hydrate during the day. Those are two critical elements with regards to wellness, right? Some people say, we don't have time to eat. Listen, I get it. Being a principal, a practitioner, superintendent, I was at every single level. Yes, I understand. And there were days where I would not eat, and that is not healthy. Please find some time to eat during the day, educators. We know how hard your academic day is. We know how, you know, structured the day is. We know how unpredictable the day is, but please find the time to eat. Thank you for that, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez. But being a principal in the AC stage of education is an arduous task. Listen, I know what you're going through right now, even in the context of catching kids up from COVID, right? That you're still experiencing, but our sector has experienced, whether it be severe teacher shortages across the country, varying and competing demands that have to be implemented at the site level. Yes, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, I was a superintendent. I know what needed to be implemented. You don't have to say no more. But when you think about grounding a strategy for high quality instruction to be normalized and coupling all of those, you know, high demands where you have to make it, you know, normalized with a high degree of consistency and vitality, right? When we talk about applying instructional strategies that are differentiated and building teacher capacity to do that, that is an arduous macro task. But like I said, you know, you stated it from your last answer, you know, have we checked on our practitioners? Have we checked on our staff? We know you have, right? But have we seen that consistently across the country in the AC stage of education? Have we really recognized that? You built that culture in your school, right, at Castleview. So we have, you know, instructional leaders, we have teachers that are part of the VFE audience. So what I want you now to do is including instructional coaches as well as site-based leaders beyond the principal level. What strategies, right, or what advice do you have to give those leaders or even teacher leader practitioners, right, who work directly with our students, who work directly with other practitioners side by side? How do you display empathy, and what does empathy look like in the AC stage of education? And you as an instructional leader, how do you create a culture of empathy?
The very first meeting that I had with teachers, I just asked them just a little bit about, you know, the school and what they loved about the school, what they wanted to continue seeing. And then I left it open to them as something they really wanted to share with me. So I took all of those comments and, you know, conversations to heart. I've tried my very best to check in. My day's very busy and I'm very fast paced at the same time. So being intentional about checking in, just popping into meetings or just lingering within wherever teachers are at. And then with building empathy is really trying to put myself in their shoes.
Yeah.
As to how to come back from all of the setbacks we've had. And then at the same time is helping them see what great educators they are and building that efficacy and then being alongside of them and making sure that they know that we are on the same team. I'm on your team, cheering you on. And being understanding when it comes to family matters, being understanding when things, you know, come up, and trying to provide that support. And then just being there to just have that open dialogue so that they can come to me and then I could support them with whatever it is that's going on, whether it's, you know, some disciplinary things with classrooms, and really building systems in place here that supports them. And then modeling too as to what I like for my students and modeling. So like if it's sending them during spring break a little postcard, or anytime there's some way to show them appreciation with a little, you know, a little Easter egg that says you're an excellent, you know, teacher, any way that we can find a little bit of fun also, because we just have to take those deep breaths and then provide a little fun for them or something that says like, I see you and I'm right there with you.
Yeah, a little appreciation, right? And I want you to elaborate on that, Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez, because you articulated that so eloquently with regards to appreciating your staff, right? And I've been hearing universally, right, whether it be East Coast, whether it be West Coast, whether it be, you know, down south in some of the southern states, where you hear this consistent macro theme of not being appreciate it, right? Can you just elaborate on that or just extend on your answer with regards to appreciation? Because I just been hearing that word frequently, right? And, you know, you explain what it looks like, but just go a little more in depth so our principals here know that our teachers, our certified staff, our site-based leaders, instructional coaches, our custodial staff, our cafeteria staff, that they feel appreciated.
I think it's the good old fashioned saying thank you. Thank you. And whenever something's done, thanking them for that. Out of nowhere, just a message, checking in, just even text message, because some people are uncomfortable with a conversation or hey, how are you doing? Group messages with, you know, with grade levels. Funny little memes that shows the humorous side of me also. We had like a teacher of the year, and they got to select their own teacher of the year. I got little sashes for those that were not, even for the ones that were nominated, so that, you know, it's not just the teacher of the year. Just also remembering what it was like to be a teacher. And I'm pretty lucky that it was 4 years ago that I could still remember just the little things that my principal did for me. She used to put little post-it notes on my desk whenever she walked through, or I would come from a weekend and there was a post-it. So I do those kind of things to take the time, walking through with a coffee cart, or dressing up like Santa and then passing out donuts, or like for our next, this coming Friday, we have like a pre-cast pancake for planning for teachers. So before we start our state testing, we're going to feed them with little pancakes. So just finding ways, looking on Pinterest to see, you know, any engagement piece or any celebratory thing for staff, so that they feel that they are appreciated.
Absolutely. And well stated, because two words can mean a whole lot in a person's day. Thank you. Small gestures of kindness, right, of appreciation, that could be it's a magnitude effect on individuals in a school community. Because I remember when I was and Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, I remember when I was a teacher, fourth grade, everybody. Now there's a misnomer out there that I taught high school history, right? No, I did not teach high school history. I am an elementary school teacher, okay? But I remember, you know, whether it be those nice gestures that, you know, my principal used to do, or, you know, a thank you coming in on a Monday, that just rejuvenates you. And you're just exemplifying how culture each strategy. So continue what you're doing, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez. Your teachers appreciate that. So now I want to get into this innovation piece, right? Because you're an innovator, right? You know, you have been, you're closely connected to the classroom, really understand classroom instruction, really understand how to build systems. I heard that word, you're building systems within your school, which is great. You know, a lot of principals, right? When we think about what's mandated from central office, you know, it's just, you know, kind of like this implementation as is, but you have to implement it into a system in the context of your culture. You recognize that. But we know that innovation is being underpinned and discussed, right, in many education spaces, which is great, right? Because I think that is the ultimate level set for equity and excellence. So being the first principal on BFB, right? So from your lens as a principal, and love hearing this because I've been hearing the definition of innovation from superintendents and executive leaders, researchers, even, you know, people at, you know, universities, right? Defining innovation, there's no really one definition of it. And we really don't hear the individuals, I say the most important individuals, you know, to our students, which are our leaders at the site-based level, and then also our teachers. Because why? Superintendents, we know this. We are too far away, right? We're too far away from being hands down or hands on with what's going on in our schools today. So that's why I want to hear the perspective of your definition, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, of innovation, because your innovation consists of empowering teachers and staff to look at pedagogical innovation in the context of equity and excellence. So what is your definition and what does it look like?
I think for me, and I never thought that I was innovative until I realized when I joined Twitter that's what I like to do, is connect with others that are doing something that's cutting edge, something different. So like at my district, we have STEM. And so right away when I became a principal, I reached out to those that did STEM so that they can come and train here and then give us that support. We're just recently putting together a peace garden. And so researching as to how does it support social emotional, so that there is a why to it. Why are we putting a garden here, or why are we continuing to do that? And then just with any way that I could interweave any research or any articles that I post in my newsletters, anything that's new, because that's how our students get engaged. Especially because they were so used to being virtual. And then we're not taking them away from the virtual world. We're now mending it and putting it together, because we could still do all those ed tech tools inside of the classroom, but then also we can do all of the in-person. So we could still, and then also letting our educators know, you know, we were virtual at one point. We are not saying goodbye to all those ed tech tools, because we can still use them for innovation in the classroom. And because they're used to that. They were used to, from kindergarten on, they were used to that screen. And so how can we continue to use those tools and then engage all of our students? And even, I mean, I know it sounds silly, but even TikTok, right? There's all these videos. Just recently, there was a video of this teacher, And she used a lip smacker with a different flavor or scent. And she would put a little dot on their kids. And then the kid loved the scent. So even things like that. So I saw them like, oh, I'm going to get my primary teacher's lip smacker. So I gave them lip smacker and I showed them the video. I'm like, this is so cool. So just things that we know kids like, and then surveying them as to what they like so that we can continue to keep up the pace with the little ones, because they're the ones that are going to benefit.
I love it, you know, and yes, we can find new innovation on social media, right? Please, let's dispel that misnomer right then and there, because you find some effective strategies to be able to get students engaged, right? And the key word is engagement, innovation for engagement. But what I really loved, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, was how you really democratized that the AI tools during the, I like to say, DC stage of education can be a continuation in the AC stage of education, using them as strategic tools to advance learning. And then also the innovation coming from the students, right? Being able to survey students to see what their likes are and how their engagement strategies addressing their specific modalities. Very, very, very critical for innovation. And one thing that I really, really like about you, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, is you let innovation come from your stakeholders and your constituents. It doesn't come from you, right? You use that empathetic approach in order to drive innovation through your constituents as well as your students. So thank you for that. Principals, and some of my superintendent friends are going to get mad at me when I say this, give the principals autonomy so that they can be able to innovate in their schools, but they will stay structured to the curriculum. Don't worry about it. They will find creative ways to innovate. We have some really creative principals that are out there creating dynamic learning conditions for kids. So please let them innovate. Defined autonomy, my fellow colleagues. Yes, that hybrid between structured and unstructured, but they're coupling one another. Last question, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez. I just advocated for every principal there. I'm probably going to get some phone calls right after that. Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez, last question. Now, some people stay in the realms of this. Some people just take it and just run with it. Then you have the innovation and creativity built into it, 3+ and a phrase. So as I state to every person that come on this show, take it how it is, okay? I'm not the one to try to limit an educator to 3 words, but what 3 words do you want today's audience to leave with regarding reaching what you strive for all in the AC stage of education? This includes eradicating gender, racial, and student group inequalities, right? Or inequities that are rooted in our schools today. So what 3 words should our audience, our principals, our teachers, certified staff, or even giving a message up to superintendents and cabinet leaders, right? What are the 3 words that they should take away about reaching all while being intentional, bold, and unapologetic?
I would say dedication, courage, and heart. That last word, heart, you have to be all in. And so using your heart and just giving it your all, corazón in Spanish, with just leading with the heart, just going in there, and because it's what drives all the passion that you have for, you know, for students and for education.
Oh, you're going to play in the rules.
There are 3.
I was waiting. I kid you not, right, Ms. Gonzalez Rodriguez? I was waiting for you to like go on, and I'm sitting here with my pen, and you just stopped. I'm like, oh, we got a rule follower. Oh, man. So dedication, courage, and heart. But I loved how you expand on heart being all, just leading with the heart. Now, this is a new one for me, because I think that is critically important, right? We have 2 guests before that talked about love, right? Leading with the heart, love, right? What is just leading with the heart? What does that look like? Just expand on that.
Well, for me, it's because of my whys, right? So just going back to why I became a classroom teacher. And for me, it wasn't like, oh, I want summers off, I'm going to be a teacher. Or, oh, what can be kind of easy? What looks easy? Oh, teachers have fun, I'm going to be a teacher. It was something that I actually made a decision to do when I was in second grade. And every decision making I've made since then has been about that. And so for me, I could say that it's been my heart, because it's all I've ever thought about. It's been, I'm a teacher, I've been a teacher. If you ask my cousins and siblings, like, I was teaching them or I was playing school. And so for me, it's my heart for giving back to what was given to me. And so it's just having that love for educators and love for the classroom.
Absolutely. And my rationale for you expanding on that is because we are in a critical juncture in education, right? Where we're educating Generation Z and Generation Alpha. And there's going to have to be radical shifts. And these radical shifts, yes, they're strategic by nature, but our leaders need to be able to lead with their heart. Right? We need to be all in. We have to ground our why and lead with empathy and lead with our heart. And Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez, thank you for stating that, right? Because I think that, you know, superintendents, leaders, right? You know, we get caught up with the day-to-day. We get caught up with, you know, our board. And, you know, sometimes I think that we can forget that, yeah, we know we got to lead with our heart, but sometimes it can be hard to display because we get pulled in every which way. So I hope that the leaders that are listening to this audience, that we continue to lead with heart in the AC stage of education and make sure is infiltrated into our schools, where our leaders, our staff, and our practitioners and our families know that, yes, even though we're here, we're leading with the heart and we're supporting our leaders so they become instructional leaders to continue the vitality and the change in the AC stage of education. So Ms. Gonzalez-Rodriguez, you know what I'm about to go do? I'm about to go get a workout right now.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you so much for being on VFE. I truly appreciate it. The first principal on VFE. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to watch your rise, right? Because everybody, this is the next superintendent coming. Trust me, you might not see it next year. You might not see it 2 or 3 years, but trust me, you will see her on the stage and I'm going to be like, look, I told you, you've helped VFE, got to start it here. So thank you, Ms. Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great day.